Blog Talk Radio.
We got glue.
All right, welcome everyone to Talk Nerdy to Me Radio. It's our book and television edition. It is Tuesday, July 20th, 2021. I am Megan, and I'm here with the ever lovely Kristen. What's up, Kristen?
What up? I'm ready to talk about books and TV.
Me too. After our summer hiatus, we are back in business to continue to talk about all things nerdy. And we have lots of really good things we're going to talk about today. We'll get some news, talk about some TV, talk about some books. And then our main discussion is going to be about the second book in the Harry Potter series, which is Chamber of Secrets. So lots of things to discuss today. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Me too. Speaking of excitement, let's start with our entertainment news. We are having the Olympics.
Okay. Yes!
The 2020 Olympics is happening, and it starts, the events are going to start tomorrow, but the opening ceremony is going to happen on Friday. Now, a couple of things about the Olympics. There's no live audience, so there's no one going to actually observe the Olympics who aren't athletes or people who are running the games, because COVID numbers not looking so great. The other thing is the time difference between Japan and the United States is so drastic that if you're going to watch any events live, it's going to be between 1:30 in the morning and like 5 in the morning. So everything is going to be recorded to watch later. So don't look things up on your phones. That's my only advice.
I believe I must watch female gymnastics live, or it'll be no fun to watch later, because then I already know who won and it's half the scores. And so I have it on my calendar. It is each day it airs is from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. And I already told my boss I was watching TV at work, so I'm ready.
Man, I guess gymnastics gets a better hour for the female soccer team. The first game is at 1:30 in the morning. So 1:30 in the morning is USA versus Sweden. There's a couple of games at 4:30, a couple of games at 6, but it's all really bad. So basically I'm turning off all my phone notifications and telling people to shut up and not post things so that I can watch it at a time that I am not sleeping. But you're super into the Summer Olympics, right? Like gymnastics, is there anything else that you're really into?
Gymnastics, swimming, of course, because my daughter's a competition swimmer, and I was in love with Michael Phelps for the longest time. Not really. I just thought he was fantastic to watch. Katie Ledecky. There's some young ones I'm excited to see swim. I'm also very excited for diving. I've heard some good things about the synchronized swimming competition. There's just a lot of stuff this year that I'm like, I'm going to have to catch these on the NBC app. Like after the fact, because I won't be able to stay up and watch them all.
For sure. So Olympics, lots of sports to watch. Some events are starting, like I said, tomorrow. And then the opening ceremony will be happening on Friday, which is going to be interesting. Interesting, different kind of opening ceremony, I imagine, because of the fact that this is not going to be the Olympics as we've always known it to be. I'll be curious to know what that's going to look like. Usually it's a big party, lots of things, but we'll see what it looks like this Friday for the opening ceremony.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Kristen. We are on the verge of all of the premieres for new television seasons, and many of the channels have released their fall schedules. So, Kristen, do you want to talk about that?
I cannot emphasize enough how anxious this made me because I am still catching up on last year. I don't know how because I work from home. I should have been caught up, but I got real lazy with my TV watching. I haven't finished SVU. I haven't finished Organized Crime because I struggle bus with that show. So I'm trying to catch up on some things. I finished catching up on some Paramount shows like Blue Bloods today. But CBS, NBC, ABC, and the CW have all released their fall lineups. They are phenomenal. Most shows are coming back September and early October. We've got like the Chicago One series all coming back September 22nd. Law and Order is coming back September 23rd. Station 19 and Grey's Anatomy on ABC coming back on the 30th of September. Survivor's coming back after quite a long hiatus from CBS Paramount because of COVID. They couldn't compete and do a competition overseas. So they're coming back. Just everyone. Literally, end of September, there's like a three-week period that all the shows are going to hit at once. And it's going to be amazing.
Awesome. We'll be watching. We'll
and the
hopefully
new CSI
be watching
is coming back.
A lot of TV. Nice.
Yeah, they're bringing back the original. The original CSI is coming back.
That's gonna be good. So lots of good things to look forward to in the TV realm. Go ahead and go to CBS, NBC, ABC, and CW to check out those fall schedules in detail to see when your favorite show is going to start. All right, so. Now it is the time for me and Kristen to either promote or warn you against a particular TV show that we watched. So, Kristen, what have you been watching?
All right, so I've been watching two things, and I'm trying to take my time and, like, savor it a little bit so I don't binge it all at once. Plus, I'm back to working full-time in office, so that I just can't do that anymore. But I'm watching Home Before Dark from Apple Plus. Apple TV Plus, excuse me. Season 2 just dropped. Season 1 was amazing. If you haven't seen it, it's based on the life of a real, like, investigative journalist whose daughter is, like, a miniature investigative journalist. It's based on his true life, and then, of course, it's dramatized. But it's a really good series. It's dark and twisty, and the little girl that plays the main character is phenomenal. So, check out season 2. And then I just recently downloaded Peacock to prepare myself for the Olympics because a lot of their stuff is streaming on Peacock. And it's free, but they do have additional ones that are $4.99 or $9.99 a month if you want to check those out. But they have a new series called Dr. Death based on the life of Christopher Dunsch, who was a doctor in Dallas, Texas, who maimed / killed 33 of his 38 patients in a 2-year period before they figured out he was a sociopath. And it's phenomenal. It's a dramatization of his life starring Joshua Jackson from, like, Dawson's Creek. And it's really good, and I'm, like, 3 episodes in, and it's only 8 episodes. So check it out.
I saw the previews of the Dr. Death. It looked super interesting to me when I saw it, so that's cool. I look forward to see how that show progresses as you watch more of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
What I watched
is Loki from Disney Plus. I didn't want to talk about it until I saw the very last episode. I'm super into these Marvel TV shows. I think usually DC does a better job with TV than Marvel. I think Marvel has bitch slapped DC out of the TV reins because all of the shows that have been released, whether it's WandaVision or Falcon the Winter Soldier or Loki, have been phenomenal. I'm not going to give too much away from Loki because there's a lot of big things in that show that you kind of have to see for yourself. I do believe it is setting up for the movies. I think you could probably see the movies without seeing the first two TV shows. I can't imagine that you can watch the movies without watching Loki. It's a pretty big plot point. and I think it'd be very complicated to explain in the movies. So I definitely recommend watching it if you're a fan of the MCU movie world. It's super interesting. If you're a comic book geek, you'll probably recognize the storyline a little bit. But it was fun. It was provocative. It was thoughtful. It was well acted. And thankfully, there is going to be a season 2, which was announced at the end of when the season ended. So it's going to be it's a great show. So if you haven't started watching it and you're an MCU nerd, go for it. It's awesome.
I haven't watched Loki yet, but it's on my to-do list, which is getting quite long, I found out.
It's true. Everything, like when we come together to talk about nerdy things, I do keep a running list of things and I add to it. And it seems like the list is getting longer and my progress on it is not going fast enough. So there's just too many things. It's true. But it's definitely a good one. So, and I think it's going to be an important plot piece for the movies moving forward. I'm so curious how they're going to play this. You need to watch the TV shows and the movies thing that they're seeming to do, how it's going to work out for them. But I dig it because I'm crazy.
Yes, you are.
All right, so let's go on to our New York bestsellers. So what's going on in the fiction world, Kristen, when it comes to our hits?
There's actually quite a few new ones. The fourth and fifth slots have been around, but I don't know if we've talked about them. So in fifth, we have People We Meet on Vacation. It's been on 9 weeks. It says, opposites Poppy and Alex meet to vacation together one more time in hopes of saving their relationship. So it sounds like a romance. Number four is The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave. It's been on 10 weeks. I just ordered this book, so I'm expecting it soon. And it's Hannah Hall discovers truth about her missing husband and bonds with his daughter from a previous relationship. The synopsis on the back of the book is so much, it sounds amazing. So I'll keep you posted on if it's good. The third is Falling by TJ Newman. This is new, and it's a kidnapper demands that a pilot crash his plane with 144 passengers on board to save his family. That sounds intense, and I'm going to have to read it. And then number two, 9 Lives by Danielle Steele. After tragedy upsets her stable family life, Maggie must decide if she will take a risk with a thrill seeker. Danielle Steele's really known for her romance. And then The Paper Place is in first by Miranda Cowley Heller. It's new. After an extramarital dalliance, Elle must choose between her husband and her childhood love. So another lots of romance on the fiction list this week.
Very cool. All right, so let's figure out what's on the public's conscience, because that's what the nonfiction list is. What are we obsessing over and can't sleep at night about? So number five has been on the New York bestsellers list for quite some time, Killing the Mob by Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard. Number four is Trio by Danny Trio and Donald Logue. This is new to the list. The Screen Actor describes how his past, which includes heroin addiction and prison time, has informed some of his roles. It's moments like this that realize that I don't have very much to write about. Like, if I was going to write an autobiography, I don't have any heroin addictions in my life to talk about. I need to, work on that, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. Number three is The Body Keeps the Score. It's been on the list for 46 weeks. It's how trauma affects the body and mind and innovative treatments for recovery. Number two is This Is Your Mind on Plants by Michael Pollan. Or Pollan. Is it Pollan? That'd be funny if it is. It is a look at arbitrary beliefs surrounding opium, caffeine, masculine, which are derived from plants. And number one is How I Saved the World by Jesse Waters. This is new on the list. The Fox News host recounts his career and prescribes a way to defend against what he considers left-wing radicalism. Don't you love that a title sounds very, like, nice and, you know, harmonious? And then you read the synopsis and it's about bashing the political party you disagree with. Isn't that great? Anyway.
So
politics and mental health seems to be the things that we're into right now.
I like it. It does. I always find it funny to see what nonfiction is trending. And I haven't forgot of our deal. I plan on reading Cast. Is it Cast? Cast?
It is Cast, yeah.
Coming up here soon, I'm going to knock it out of the park.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I like it. All right, so what are some thoughts that are on your mind?
All right. So some recommendations of some recent reads I've had the joys of taking part in. I just finished a book earlier this weekend, The Girl in the Headlines by Hannah Jane. It came out last Tuesday. It was phenomenal. I've read 4 other Hannah Jane books, and this has been my absolute favorite. I've given some of her books like 3 out of 5 stars. This was hands down 5 out of 5. Literally the first sentence in the book is like super, like you're in the thick of the story. And it's about a girl who wakes up in a hotel. She's 18 and she can't remember how she got there. She can't remember anything of what happened the day before. And on the news, it says her parents have been killed and her little brother is missing and she is the prime suspect. So this like guy at the front desk that's her age, like helps her, and it's her trying to figure out what happened so she can, because she doesn't think she did it. And it was fantastic. I don't want to tell you anymore. So good. It's a YA fiction mystery thriller. Fantastic. Read it. So that was my first one. And then the second one,
okay,
I just read with my book. Second one is from Book Club. It was The Duke and I by Julia Quinn. It's from The Bridgerton Show. It's the book it's based on. And it's significantly different than the show, which I was really surprised by. But I would highly recommend reading it because it's funnier. And it's not as sex-driven if that turned you off in the show. There is some sexual scenes, but not until like closer to the end. And the rest of it is just more funny and not as dramatic as the show is.
Okay.
I like it. And that's it.
Right.
So Megan, what are you currently reading?
I'm currently reading a nonfiction book. It's called Sea People, The Puzzle of Polynesia by Christina Thompson. I realized I know a lot about history, but there's gaps. And in terms of like my Filipino Polynesian history, it's pretty weak. So I made a pact with myself to read more of those stories, so that I can include more of those stories, in my teaching. So, I'm reading that one. It's written very easily. It's a really, good book. She is obviously by the name Christina Thompson. You can kind of guess she's probably not Polynesian. And she's not. She's a white lady. But she's married to a Polynesian man. And so she was a researcher, a historian, and she wanted to learn more about her kids' histories, right? So it kind of came out of a labor of love, and it kind of reads it like that. And so I've been enjoying it. So if you're like me and you're like, man, I don't know anything about Polynesian history except for Moana – read it, because Moana is not necessarily
Polynesian
history. Good movie, though. How about you, Kristen? What are you reading?
So you're going to be shocked, I tell you. I am reading a nonfiction book.
What?
Yes, it is called The Girls Who Stepped Out of Line, and it's untold stories of the women who changed the course of the World War II And it's by Major General Mary K. Eder. It's so good. So I love historical fiction because I love reading dramatized stories of the things people experience. But I also found that I want to know, I feel like we're in a time when people are forgetting. And I read statistics in this book today that said today it was like 30%, 30-something percent of Americans, 31%, and then 41% of millennials in general do not believe that the Holocaust even happened, that 6 million Jews did not die. And that
blew
my mind.
Isn't that
crazy? And I was like, it's insane.
It makes me as a teacher so confused because I know that at least everyone in my district does teach it. So it makes me wonder how many schools are not thoroughly bringing that part of our human history to light in a way that is impactful.
Well, I read a thing. It was like, ask your child how many Jews died in the Holocaust. So I asked I think she was 12 at the time. I asked my 12-year-old daughter, I said, how many Jewish people died during the Holocaust? And her response was, what is the Holocaust? And I was like, what are they teaching you in school? You are 12. And so I sat and made her watch movies because I knew she wouldn't sit through a documentary. But I made her watch The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. Yep. to get like a little visual there. But seriously, this book goes over so many different, and it's different women. Like some were like with the OSS, some were, people in camps that helped keep other people alive. One was like a Japanese child who grew up to be an American and did all the things that she was actually like saved by American soldiers, and she later got to find them and thank them. And so it's just all these different stories. Each chapter is, it's like short stories. Each chapter is a short story about this, a certain person's life. Most of them are dead now. But it's just fascinating to see the things that they did where women in World War II did not get recognition. Like the women in OSS were not recognized as veterans, even though they were spies. They were over in, like, France and such, like, spying on the enemies, dating Nazis to get information from them. And they were not getting veteran rights for 60 years. And so this book is fascinating. I think everyone should have to read it.
You know, it sounds crazy fascinating. I'm adding it to my ever-long list as we speak because it sounds...
Yeah.
It sounds crazy awesome, but it's true. There's a lot of people who have done something for our country that we don't recognize as much as we should. Women who serve, African-Americans who serve don't get enough credit either. So it's really cool that you're reading about those histories and that you're encouraging other people to read about those histories because I think it's incredibly important.
It has made me want to read other nonfiction to get other sides of it. So I've been looking into other books about World War II. That time frame fascinates me. And I feel like we're so close to falling into that same problem that it's just interesting to educate myself on it.
Yeah, especially the rise of fascism that seems to be happening across the globe. Not just in this country, but like across the globe. There seems to be a rise in this weird authoritarian.
Yep.
Mindset that is, and this like downing of democracy. So everyone, watch yourself. Anyway, what is going on in the book club?
So book club, it is July. We are reading The Duke and I by Julia Quinn, which is the book I just recommended. I have already finished it this month. Super easy read, guys. Come join us. There's still 10 days left in the month, 11. Plenty of time to read it. We have 2 discussion questions up.
Yeah.
We post every Friday. We're over on book clubs. Just go to book clubs, create an account, search Just One More Chapter book club. Our logo is purple and white. You can't miss it. And then for August, we've just announced our August book. It's going to be The Woman in Cabin 10 by Ruth Ware. It's a mystery thriller about this guy who goes on this very small like cruise ship trip and he sees a woman get thrown over, but none of the guests are missing. And so he starts investigating and things happen. So I'm excited to read that one as well in August.
That one does sound fascinating. So go ahead, go check that out. Come join for reading and answering and discussion.
Yay.
It makes reading more fun. I've heard. I just always think that I'm too busy for book clubs, but maybe I'm not. Maybe that's just all in my head, and I should get over it and join. But I've heard it's good.
You should.
All right, Kristen, are you ready to enter the Chamber of Secrets?
I'm so ready. I was born ready.
You were born ready for this. All right, so last time we did books and television, we talked about Sorcerer's Stone. And how we kind of frame the conversation is me and Kristen are going to pick a couple of, like, scenes from the book that we thought was super cool, and then we're going to, like, name who won the book. Because every book, I think, has a different character that shines. So we'll talk about that. We're also going to go over some of the major characters that have been introduced in the book, or some major, you know, places or parts of the universe that were introduced, as well as the themes. So let's start off with the themes. So I think with Sorcerer's Stone, it was really a intro book to the world. So the themes, I feel like, in that book in particular was about belonging, like finding your place, identity, and magic, like what is magic and setting that world up. What kind of themes did you see in Chamber of Secrets?
There was a lot of, like, we start to see, I guess, more of, I want to call it bullying, or like, you have a word listed here, like prejudice. It's not just our world, you know. In Harry Potter, there's people who have two magical parents, or no magical parents, or one magical parent, and one muggle. You know, there's people that come from different, I guess, like breeds, like giants and things like that. There's, you know, one of the professors is a dwarf. And so, like, there's different, you know, there's different prejudices that start showing up, and we see that meanness a lot more in this book, in my opinion.
No, I agree 100%. I kind of feel like it's like in, like, the Sorcerer's Stone is like kindergarten. Like, it's, you show up, you're just excited to meet people that are not your parents. You might be a little shy, a little scared. You want to, like, find where you belong, and, like, everything's, like amazing. And then the more you spend time in school, the more time you spend time in a system or with a group of people, you start to see the imperfections in it. And I feel like in this book, they start to really lay out, okay, not only is there magic, not only is it being kept secret from the muggles out of safety, not only was this horrible thing happen in the past with Voldemort, but there's also remnants of that horrible past with Voldemort that still exists in the school today, whether it's Malfoy hating on Ron Weasley, who's a pureblood, right? 100% magic. Should be on his list of people to love, right? If he's that prejudiced person.
Right.
But no, he still hates the Weasleys. And the reason why he hates the Weasleys is because the Weasleys are not well off. They're not affluent. They're poor, right? So they're just as bad as people who are not fully magical in that prejudiced mind. So you got classism that exists, and also prejudice that starts to be at the forefront, where people who are muggle-born, which are people who are born to non-magical parents who happen to get, I don't know, that magical gene in the DNA randomly, or people who are half-blood not being as good as people as who are pure-blood. And it's, we find out through the storytelling that it's not just an issue with the Malfoys, who tend to be the most explicit about it in the Harry Potter stories, but it's also entrenched in the Hogwarts history and the decision-making of the founders about who should go to Hogwarts. And so there's just multiple layers to this idea of who should be educated, who should be magical, that starts to get introduced in this book in particular.
I agree. I love Draco Malfoy, but I really start to hate him in this book.
Yeah, he's very hateable in this book. It is true. And obviously we know that he's, you know, indoctrinated by his parents because hate is learned. Just like my kindergarten reference, most kindergartners and young kids, when you put them in a playground, they're not looking around going, oh, that person's black or that person's this. They're just like, oh my God, people to play with. That's something that over time we teach them to be weird about. So obviously it is something that was taught to him. But he is definitely hateable and punchable in this book in particular. So what did you prefer? Obviously, we've only talked about two books. But did you prefer Sorcerer's Stone or Chamber of Secrets?
This is a hard one. Oh, my. So I like Sorcerer's Stone because it's like a fresh look. Everything's new. We're just like it was new for Harry, it was new for us. So it's all exciting. But Chamber of Secrets,
yeah.
I like because we start to see them grow up. We start to see them adapt the skills they're learning and really kind of start to grow as these kids turning into teenagers, like getting closer and closer to that age. So that's a hard one for me. I want to say I like the original just a little bit better. Sorcerer's Stone, just a tad.
And I'm going to go with Chamber of Secrets because I can get more political in terms of like being complex about the story. Chamber of Secrets takes it to the next level. Sorcerer's Stone though would be the one that I would go to for like an escape. Like if I was going to watch like a hug movie, I would watch the Sorcerer's Stone movie without a shadow of a doubt. That's one giant hug. And I'd also read the Sorcerer's Stone book for the same reason. And then obviously as the series progresses, it gets more and more dark and more complex. All right. Any other general thoughts before we start talking about some of the things that happen in the book?
No. I'm excited about this part.
All right. Yeah. So, by the way, if we didn't tell you this before, we're going to spoiler the crap out of this. So if you're like one person out of a billion who haven't seen the movies or watched them or seen the movies or read the books, now is the time to like turn it off and read the book and then come back because we're not, I think enough time has passed for us not to worry about that. All right. So one of my favorite things, and this is actually in my top three talking points, so I'm going to talk about it within the context of this, is that at the beginning of the story, we find Harry in the same miserable setting we found him in with the first book, with the Dursleys being neglected and treated horribly. But then something amazing happens. What amazing thing happened, Kristen?
I don't know.
So Harry is in his bedroom. He's alone, being treated like crap. But then who comes at the window? No other than Ron Weasley and the twins and the flying car. Love the flying car. All of the scenes in the flying car are amazing.
Weasleys. Anything
all
the Weasleys do, that's my favorite.
This is true. But look, all of the scenes, whether it's the flying car where the Weasleys are busting out Harry from the horrific existence of the Dursleys, or whether it's Ron and Harry solo trying to get to Hogwarts and then crashing into the Whomping Willow, all of the scenes are fantastic in the book. Very, very funny. I kind of wish I had a flying car. That I love. Another thing that happens is that once they rescue Harry, we finally get to see the Burrow, which is the residence of the Weasley. So what did you think about the description of the Burrow and kind of the characterization of that house?
I love the Burrow. I love the way they describe it. And I got to say, I know we're talking book, but I feel like the book description was nailed in the movie. So I got to give credit there. But the book description literally describes it as like this stack. It's like they just kept stacking. And that's what it looked like in the movie, which was amazing.
Like,
I love it.
Like, oh, crap. We've had another child. Let's magically put this bedroom on.
Right. Let's just add another. And I just love that there's like a ton of stairs and it's like cozy. It's like cluttered, but cozy, not messy. It's just there's a lot of people and a little space. And they just
don't care
that Harry joins them.
To me, the Hogwarts, I mean, the Burrow is kind of the manifestation of the Weasleys themselves. It's this, like, warm, comforting, chaotic, good, like, setting to be in. Both a hug and a, like, you know, a haphazard, like, Molly doing the best she can with the crazy amounts of children she has. And just being a really magical place. To me, the Burrow is probably one of the places that I would choose to live. Not only that, they have, like, farm animals and stuff, which I think is cool. So the Burrow is pretty sweet. And because of that, we get to meet a little bit more of the Weasley family. So obviously we knew about George and Fred from the first book. And we get introduced a little bit more to Molly Weasley, who we also saw in the first book, but very, very slightly. Now, Kristen, you said as one of your favorite things about this book is meeting and getting to know Mrs. Weasley. So do you want to explain that a bit more?
Yeah, so we met Miss Weasley briefly in the first one when Harry's trying to go into the platform 9 3/4. And I liked her then, but we really get to know her. Like, she's yelling at her kids, and then she's like, oh, hello, Harry. Like, she loves Harry. And as their relationship grows, I know in this book, like, she does slowly start to treat him more like a son, like right from the get-go, like sending him presents, you know, always included in the things. But I just love her. She's crazy, and I feel like she's me if I had that many children.
She reminds me of, like, the classic, like, she's not Italian, obviously, but she reminds me of that Italian mother.
Yeah.
Like the one who gets mad when you don't call her back, and who loves you fiercely and will kill anyone. Like, obviously, with Bellatrix Lestrange, she did. She would kill anyone who hurts her family, but yell at them when they're acting like monkeys. And just, like, to me, she's, like, the quintessential, like, Italian mama bear kind of mom.
Like, I'm the only one that can kill my family.
Yes, exactly that. She is a little bit more of the high-strung one of the partnership between her and Mr. Weasley, I would say. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
150%. But Molly's amazing. I super enjoyed having Arthur Weasley. I enjoy Arthur Weasley. I think he's the perfect partner for Molly. He's a lot more laid back, has a really good sense of humor, is fascinated by muggles, and has
muggles.
A shed. Yeah, and has, like, a shed full of, like, random muggle things, which I just,
every time he talks to Harry, he's like, tell me about this. And it's always like, tell me about the telephone. And tell me, like, he's so fascinated by the things that we do as humans that, you know, the muggles, that it's just funny. Every time he talks, I just smile. I love the whole Weasley family, except for
Percy. The reason why is because he's a nerd. Like if he would be on our show and he would have a podcast about muggles, like, that's his thing. That's his jam. He's super fascinated by it. He's super passionate about it. He gets a one-track mind about it. So I guess I really admire a fellow nerd who is super passionate about something. And not only that, he just has a really good moral compass in terms of how to treat people. He doesn't want to get promotions because he loves his job, because he's really into muggles, and other people might not understand that, but he's doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's not making a lot of money, he's still a very well-respected person at the ministry. So he's just that kind of guy, and he just seems like a fun dad. And I can just picture the dynamics between Arthur and Molly raising those kids. I think it's a fun, like, I would love to see, like, scenes of them dealing with, like, Fred and George when they're 8.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine them?
Like, that would just be, it'd be fun. but yeah, so we get a little bit of taste of the burrow, and we meet some more Weasleys, which is never a bad thing. We also get a little bit look at more variety ways to travel. So we already knew about the broom. We knew about the flying motorcycle. We now have the flying car. And then we learned about something about called flu powder, which is you travel from one chimney to the next, which they use to get to Diagon Alley to prepare for the new school year. So which travel option do you prefer?
I mean, I would prefer to apparate because it's fast. I don't think I'd like flu powder traveling. The way Harry describes it is there's lots of spinning. I would be super nauseous.
Vertigo.
Yeah.
I think I'm sticking with flying car.
That's
all for it.
Yeah. Flying car. How much cooler can you get?
So we go to Diagon Alley, which we knew about from the first book. But we learn about a different part of Diagon Alley called Nocturne Alley, which is like the shady part of Diagon Alley, where there's more underground selling weird objects that are potentially dangerous. Would you ever go to Nocturne Alley? Or would you avoid it?
Absolutely not. It sounds so dirty.
It does sound so dirty. Mm-hmm. I think I would just go to see what kinds of people go there.
Oh, yeah,
and then
totally.
Leave. Just to, like, spy slightly. Especially if I'm invisible ability club.
Spy at them.
Check it out. But they would probably have a thing to detect that at Diagon on Nocturne Alley. And then something amazing happened at this time at the bookstores, but we meet two other characters that we haven't seen before. One of those people being Gilderoy Lockhart. What do you think about Gilderoy Lockhart?
Oh, my God. He's so annoying. Like, I don't get it. I don't get the swoon that all the girls... I mean, I guess he could be dreamy, but... I don't know. He annoys me. Like, from the get... I was like, oh, you're not my kind of people at all.
It was, like, one of the things that you, like, were like, Molly, really? Why are you so into
him?
Yeah,
I'm like, could you not... Could you not?
Not be
a man. I don't like him.
Stop it.
Oh.
No, he's obviously a fraud. He's 100%. Bullshit. He takes stories from people. But do you know what house he is?
I Hufflepuff?
He's a Ravenclaw.
I could see that.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
feel like he doesn't believe in any.
He doesn't believe
he
in any?
In none. No, he doesn't belong in any of them.
Well, the reason why I enjoy that they put him in that she put him in Ravenclaw is because I do think that there is toxic behaviors in all of them. And in Ravenclaw, you want to be, you want to be that wisdomous, knowledgeable person, and that's what he wants to as well. He just doesn't have the skills to do it, right? He's not that smart. He's not that capable. He's definitely not that brave. So he found a way to look smart so that he can become famous by taking other people's stories, right? And then putting those brain alterations on those people who actually live those adventures. So to me, it makes sense. He's probably a hybrid Slytherin Ravenclaw. But I can see him as a Ravenclaw. And he is, of course, been named as the new Defense of Dark Arts teacher. Another person that we met was Lucius Malfoy. In one of my favorite scenes is Arthur Weasley punching Lucius Malfoy. That just made me so happy.
I have a lot of respect one of my for Arthur at that moment.
I was like, yes. That was like one of those moments where I literally cheered while reading. Yes. I also cheered when Hermione punched Malfoy, too. So,
yeah.
Malfoy's getting
anyone
punched.
Punching a Malfoy, I'm okay with.
Sure. They deserve it. They need a punch. They make horrible life decisions. What did you think of Lucius Malfoy?
Terrible. And all these people that have weird cross relationship things for Lucius and Hermione need to stop it.
It's wrong. He's just so many
It is wrong. And you know what? The way he is described in the book, like the pointy nose, just like Draco, like you just know, I could picture him and he's got that look like, you disgust me because you're beneath me. That's the look I feel like is constantly on his face because he thinks he's better than everyone.
Yes, I agree. I think he has resting I'm better than you face.
He's got like an RBF. RBF for a man.
Resting bitches. For sure. But yes, I think he's a horrific man. I think he is an abusive, a horrible father too. Just not worthy of fictionally being shipped
overall,
with Hermione Granger.
Overall, terrible human. That is all.
Yes. That's it. We also learn about a new species of people called house elves, and we meet one in particular called Dobby. So, Kristen, I'm going to get out of the way because you seem to be super into Dobby.
I love Dobby. Now, Dobby is kind of annoying at the beginning of Chamber of Secrets. He's annoying in the sense that he's the reason him and Ron have to use the flying car even more. He tries so many things to, like, I don't know. Dobby is this, he always has the best intentions, and they always turn out terribly, which is funny. Mm-hmm. He always has the best intentions. He's, from day one, always trying to protect Harry, but he's also very abusive to himself, and we later find out that's because Lucius Malfoy is his handler, and he's a terrible person.
Yeah.
So Dobby actually has one of my favorite scenes in this, and it's he becomes free.
He does.
I love free Dobby.
Me too.
And I love
he deserved it.
Lucius Malfoy off.
Exactly. That
Lucius
is what
Malfoy
made it
off.
Better.
Yeah.
And that
makes me happy.
Just speaking to the thoughts that you were having, that Dobby has the best intentions, but it doesn't always go to plan. Either making the situation worse, he's the reason why Ron and Harry had to use the flying car because they missed their, you know, like all those things. And Ron has a great line that I just found. So Dobby stopped us from getting on the train and broke your arm. You know what, Harry? If he hasn't stopped trying to save your life, he's going to kill you.
Yes.
And that is Dobby in a nutshell. He tries so hard, but just ends in disaster.
Yeah, he's always like, I'm going to save you. And Harry's like, please stop. Please stop trying to save me. That'd be swell.
Doesn't end up. All right. So now we're going to get to the heart of the story. So these are obviously we've already talked about the people we've met. Now it's going to be the idea. So Chamber of Secrets is a part of the school that was made by Salazar Slytherin, who believed that only purebloods should be educated. And the myth goes that he locks this basilisk, which is this giant snake, which I hope to never meet in my entire life, into the school. He locks it down there, and the chamber gets reopened. Now, why in the world did they not go look for the basilisk? If they knew this myth was around here, why not go and kill it because it's in a school? That's my question.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, especially, like, I feel like for as smart as they make Dumbledore, like, he knows everything. He knew Harry had the, you know, was under the thing. And there's so many times in the stories where Dumbledore knows things and you're like, how does he know? He just does. He knows everything. I'm like, how did he not know the basilisk is real, where to find it, and how to get rid of it?
Right? Like, that's, like, the thing that blows my mind.
And
Ron,
I was just going to say, and that Gilderoy Lockhart's an idiot. How did he not know that?
All of these things. But it's true, though. Like, and they got really lucky, because just in case you didn't catch this in the book, the reason why no one died, the Moaning Myrtle, who's another person we met in this book that I just remember on top of my head, we'll talk about her in a second. Moaning Myrtle actually died the last time the Chamber of Secrets was opened, because she got the full look of the basilisk, because if you look the basilisk directly in the eye, you're dead. The reason no one else died is because they saw the basilisk indirectly, either through water or through a mirror, right? So they got super lucky that everyone just happened to see it indirectly. And they had someone die. Like, why did they not investigate this? I have a lot of questions, and if I was a parent, I'd probably sue. But anyway. So there's that. So Hogwarts itself, like we said, Hogwarts itself, its founding had a lot of complications and a lot of bad history. The founding fathers of Hogwarts didn't get along with each other all the time. They had different ideas about how the school was supposed to run. One was a racist,
right,
or the magical equivalent of a racist. And so that history is very much ingrained in the culture of the wizarding community within Great Britain and probably across the world in different levels. Moaning Myrtle. What did you think about her?
Yep. So in the book, she's a little annoying. In the movie, she's super annoying. In the audiobook, she is the most annoying character ever. So audiobook, Moaning Myrtle is terrible.
Annoying.
Yeah, like Moaning Myrtle, maybe it's because I don't like her voice, but she is so annoying. But I don't know. I feel like in the book, she's not as terrible as she is in the movie, so.
I think it's probably because we can make her voice as annoying as we want to in her own mind.
That's probably true.
Compared to that. But yeah, no, I mean, she's a very creepy. I mean, as the book progresses, she becomes more, like, there's more evidence that she's kind of creepy. So she's creepy and weird and dark, and obviously died. But she could be entertaining at times, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Debbie Downer kind of
person. When he's in a later book, he's in a bathtub. She's quite entertaining in that scene in the book.
Yes, entertainingly creepy.
Right, exactly.
And then we also learned about how Hagrid got expelled. So we knew that he wasn't allowed to do magic in the first book, but we didn't really know the context for why. And then we learned that there was a belief that Hagrid was the individual responsible for opening up the Chamber of Secrets instead of Tom Riddle, who ends up being Voldemort, ends up growing up to be Voldemort. What did you think about Hagrid's backstory and kind of that, those details?
I felt really bad for him, because even when they said, oh, Hagrid was accused, he was suspended, that's why he's not supposed to do magic, even though he carries that, like, umbrella thingy, that is very clearly his wand hidden. But I feel like I was instantly sad for him, because just, like, the little bit we had already learned of Hagrid in the books, you know, with book one and then the beginnings of book two, you know that, like, he's not. And there was a point where I was like, well, maybe he really did, because he did, you know, he does weird things for animals, the magical creatures.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't foresee him messing around with a snake. No offense. Giant poisonous snake that will mummify you or petrify you.
I think he has a line. But, I mean, you could see why people would think that maybe he wouldn't have a line, because Aragog is freaking terrifying. That's a big spider.
Yeah, that, like, seriously, that is my nightmare was watching that play out on a big screen. When I read the book, I was like, oh, no. I was like, this is not going to be something I enjoy.
Yeah, in your head it was bad, and then when you watched it back on screen, it was even worse. I agree. Totally don't understand why people think Hagrid would do it, because he is the nicest person ever. But yes, he does have a tendency of loving animals that might not
shouldn't
need to be loved in that capacity. But he was the scapegoat, right? He was the person who people blamed to make people feel better about things. But Dumbledore knew it was Riddle.
Yep.
And all of that. So let's talk about Voldemort now. He creates a diary.
Can we not?
Can we not? Let's just talk about the
good
people.
As a young kid, this Voldemort dude was quite smart, and it's disturbing how smart he is for being a half-breed. Let's call it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be all mean, I'm going to be mean too. You're a half-breed, and you're weirdly smart.
It's true. He is incredibly smart. He's definitely a sociopath and a narcissist.
Talk about this diary? Who thought it was a good idea that they were going to open this diary and write, and it started writing back, and your first thought wasn't, this is possessed? Because that would be my first thought. I'd be like, oh, no, it's talking back to me. It's answering my question.
Yeah.
There's no good spell that would make that happen.
Agreed. I think it'd be really weird. And I just think it's so interesting that Lucius Malfoy is the one who puts the diary into Ginny's basket or cauldron. And then Ginny starts writing into the diary and becomes possessed, and she becomes the person who opens up the chamber on Voldemort's behalf. That plan could go so wrong for that was a very half-baked plan, but apparently it worked. Now, what is it like? Because I agree with you. If I was writing in a diary and all of a sudden it was running back to me, I would be like, "This is freaking weird." I think even in the if I knew magic existed, I still think, because you're going to be divulging so much of yourself in a journal, Like, that's an amount of intimacy that you don't even tell your friends, right? Because your journal is, like, your non-censored self, right?
I just think, so like, what is it, like, why would you find a diary in your cauldron, you happen to open up and start writing, and it starts writing back, and you're like, oh, this is completely natural.
So,
work with me.
Do you think that was a not well-explained plot point, or do you think that there's something that Jenny was going to say that explains why she was susceptible to that?
I think being new to school and her love for Harry Potter might have had something to do with it. You know, being new, of course, is always hard. So I think she had a bit of, like, a naivety as well as just being really vulnerable to persuasion. But part of me is also like, you've got to have, a little bit more common sense. You're 11. You're not stupid. My child at 11 would not have been like, yeah, this is a good idea. I should do this, and I shouldn't tell anyone that this diary is talking back to me and asking me to do things that I dang well know are not good.
Yeah. Agreed.
It was like an explained plot point, but at the same time, it was a poorly thought out plot point.
Yeah, you had to suspend a lot. Like, you had to suspend your imagination. But then again, there are things that people do that are reality for today that I'm still like, how could you be so stupid? Like, people getting into sex cults. And, you know, like, so.
Oh, my God. Like,
it just could be.
Can we do a show about that?
Sure. Like, there's a lot of things like, how did you not know that was going to happen?
They branded you with a metal iron. Nothing came to mind that this is wrong.
This is not wrong. But so it could be that just Tom Riddle is a very persuasive sociopath, cult-like sociopath. And Ginny was feeling lonely, and that was the combination that was needed to create that situation. Because there are, I mean, it happens way more often than I think we as human beings want to admit. But we are pretty manipulative. Like, we're pretty easy to manipulate.
That's
as evidenced by our politics.
I was just going to say, Voldemort reminds me of Trump.
Charismatic and cult-like, but also grotesque at the same time.
Like if purebloods are the best, but I'm like, you're not a pureblood.
No,
but
like,
everyone thinking you're the best. So confusing.
Yeah, but Adolf Hitler also had Jewish blood in him, so.
That's true.
Sometimes we hate what we are.
Yep.
And then
so
we people that were not that and make them hate the thing that you are. Wow, that's really deep. We're getting really deep today. But it's okay. because everything survived. All the people who were petrified who came back to life. And Ginny... I think would be super interesting is to find out more about how Ginny copes with being possessed. I think that was a plot point that was majorly dropped. Because, like, I would think that there would be some psychological ramifications of that.
Yeah,
like, oh my God, I told
my
sister
it's fine.
Yeah. Like, I think needed to be explained a bit more. I don't know how you can go from possessed to, like, I'm a firecracker. Like that I think needed to be explained a bit more. All right, what else? Oh yeah, Fox. The Phoenix.
I love him. What, I just want one.
I want one too. Especially healing like tears. Like I sprained my ankle, so if it could cry on my ankle and I could walk again, that would be grand.
Right, can you just like cry on me? I'll be good to go.
Yes. Great.
That'd be genius,
we just
right?
Want,
like,
we just want to use it.
I know.
And
but he's pretty,
useful,
too, the way he explain him.
Mm-hmm. And he is useful for two reasons. Number one, his tears have high healing properties, but also because they can carry large weights of people, which gets them out of the Chamber of Secrets. So,
yes,
definitely good. Also, another thing that came to mind is the Sword of Gryffindor, which came out of the hat, which was the weapon of choice that Harry used to kill the basilisk. And that becomes an important artifact for the Founding Fathers. Yeah. All right, anything
else? Yeah, and becomes
else?
A really big part of this story.
Mm-hmm.
Any Chamber of Secrets? Let's see. No, I think that this story, this is not my favorite story in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Enough that there was just a lot going on. We didn't get as much character development in this book because of how much was going on, I felt like. We did get some, don't get me wrong. But I feel like other books, they grew up a little. We were so focused on stupid basilisk that we didn't get as much. We should get a little side
sure,
story. I would like to see this story from Ginny's perspective and what she was doing.
Yes, I would so love
that
too. And I also would love the recovering process because I don't believe it was easy.
Yes.
I can't imagine
no,
being like, oh my God, I opened up the Chamber of Secrets. People could have been killed. Oh my God. To like
fine.
Normal. Like, I just don't get
right.
it. Cool. All right. So for your favorite character of this book only, so not over the entire span of the
mm-hmm.
series, who was your favorite character of this book?
Probably two. I think Ron and Hermione really made this book. Harry would never have made it where he did without them, of course. But I feel like we got to know Ron a lot. And you'll probably agree with that. In this book, we got to know his personality a little bit more. He became a lot more helpful. And Hermione was literally the brains of the operation chunk of it.
Yeah.
And so I think they were my favorites in this story. And, of course, Dobby. I like Dobby.
Mm-hmm. And to me, I think Ron wins this one because I think Prisoner of Azkaban is the movie where Hermione has that adventure with Harry. And in this book, it's Ron who has the adventure with Harry.
Yep.
I think you get to see his family. You get to see how lovely his family is. You get to see him face his fears, which is going into a giant cave with a bunch of spiders. You get to see you get to see him take Hermione's clue that she left when she got petrified that led them to finding the Chamber of Secrets and being that detective with Harry. They're like the Hardy Boys in this movie or in this book. And I just felt like he showed his loyalty and he showed how dedicated he is to kind of show up for his friends even when he is incredibly uncomfortable. So that's why I'm going to give it to Ron. Now, you have been listening to the audiobook. Is there any thoughts about that that you wanted to share?
So I really hate Moaning Myrtle. In the book, I mentioned that earlier, her voice, it's the voice. The voice does it. And the Jim Dale is the person doing the reading in this book. And he does phenomenal voices, but Moaning Myrtle's man, whew, I can't. She annoys
mm-hmm.
me. But listening to the book has, like, little things about the story, like little things about how they get down into the Chamber of Secrets, how they get past the different obstacles, There's just little things about it that are different. I feel like Ron's even snarkier in the book than he is in the movie, and it really stands out in the audiobook because you hear the voice actor doing it. And I love the movie, but when you're reading, you can put so much snark into it. But when somebody else is reading it to you and they're doing it how they feel it's described, it's different. So I just feel like the characters are just a little bit more in the audiobook than they are when I'm reading, because somebody is virtually acting them out for the basic gist of it. So it's been interesting picking up little things that I've missed.
And as for the movie, I don't have too many issues with Chamber of Secrets. Chamber of Secrets is a pretty small book. I felt like they covered all the things that needed to be covered. All of the characters that were introduced were also introduced in the movie. So I really don't have any major issues just with my ongoing upsetness of the railroading that happened to Ron. Like, for instance, the facing the spiders thing, it was more of like they made it a comical scene, probably to offset how scary it is to kids. That's probably why they made that cinematic choice. But I think they did lose the fact that he was facing his greatest fear, man. Like, he's not an idiot. He went in there knowing he was going to face his fear, and he did it. So, mad props to him.
And if we can be fair, if we're going to be fair here, I would have never made it into the forest. I would have turned around and left. So,
like, nope.
Props to Ron.
A hard pass.
I'm like, Harry, you're on your own. I got to go.
I'll get a new best friend.
Right.
And I think a lot of people would, which is, I think is what's so upsetting about the movie assassination of Ron, is because he is that friend that goes beyond what I think most of us would do. So,
yep.
My every episode, there will probably be a moment in which I defend Ron. So just get used to it.
That's fine. Ron deserves it.
Any other thoughts before we close our conversation?
No, I think Chamber of Secrets was a great book. They made a great movie out of a great book. And I actually really like the next book, so I'm excited to talk about that next time. Next books and TV.
Me too. So we will be back 2 weeks to talk about Prisoner of Azkaban. Watch out for that. All right, so Kristen, what is your nerdy obsession?
All right, so my nerdy obsession right now is work. I've returned to full-time in-office instead of working virtually from home. So I'm kind of adapting to that schedule, and I work more than one job, so I'm very tired most of the time. So this is really late for me. Like, I'm in bed by now. So if I yawned, I apologize. It's not you, it's me. But I've been doing that. And
I've
so
heard that before.
A lot of times I'm just, right, I'm too tired to, like, watch a show and really focus on it. So I'll pick up my book and read a few chapters before going to sleep. So really just reading, catching up on my reading goals for myself, and that's been my focus.
Very cool. Well, I sprained my ankle. It's much better now. The only thing I have
doing
trouble with is going downstairs now. So upstairs is fine. Walking is fine now. Just downstairs. But when I first sprained it, I really couldn't move. So I've just been rewatching the entire Law and Order universe. And I'm doing it chronological. So I watched season 1 through 10 of Law and Order. And then once I got to when SVU started, I'm now watching an episode of SVU and then Law and Order and then SVU and then Law and Order. And it's super cool to see how many of the defense attorneys are at play in both. And it's a different take of Law and Order that I think is really cool. And once I get to when Criminal Intent starts, I'll do the same thing there. So that's what I'm doing.
That's awesome.
So basically, I just think everyone is here to commit a crime. Every noise is just waiting for the inevitable.
Valid.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We want feedback on what to discuss in the world of nerddom, so please give us feedback and follow us at talknerdy_radio. We'd love to hear from you. Make sure you bookmark nerdprobs.com for articles, blogs, and reviews. Join our book club on Facebook called Just One More Chapter, or go to book clubs and look it up that way. And me and Kristen will be back to talk about something when it comes to music and movies. Next Tuesday. All right, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.